Hello and welcome back to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast. I'm your host, Joe Nuttall, and as ever, I'm joined by my co-host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur. So Aaron, how are you doing?
I'm doing very, very well, Joe. I have to admit, I mean, I'm guessing you saw on Twitter yesterday, Warwickshire's admin, Matt, was coming out absolutely all guns blazing. He was coming for everyone, wasn't he?
Yeah, I was a bit confused about that. I wasn't really sure what was happening. I kind of just scrolled past it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, explain that, please.
For those who haven't seen it, it was absolutely hilarious. So first of all, he was sending shots at Worcestershire's admin because Worcestershire didn't put up any like tickets, notifications for the general sale. And then he started coming for everyone. Like he put, you know, the Delia Smith talk from Norwich, from years ago. Yeah, that iconic one. He put a gif of that up. Oh my goodness. Tagging every single North Group team. Then the South Group team started chiming in. So Gloucestershire, for example, I think Glamorgan also had a cheeky pop as well. Absolute carnage. But what a way to start a Monday morning. Absolutely hilarious. Brilliant entertainment. So big up to Matt. He is Warwickshire's admin. Great, great laugh. But yeah, to be honest, Joe, it's been a decent 24 hours. Had some fantastic test cricket on today between Afghanistan and Zimbabwe. Blessing Mazarabani, a former North Ants seamer who I'm really going to miss in county cricket, to be honest. Great, great young prospect. He took 4 wickets today against Afghanistan. So yeah, overall, Joe, pretty happy. And the sun's just come out. So yeah, all in all, pretty good. How about yourself, mate?
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit taken aback with all that thing with Warwickshire now. Don't really know what to say to that. Like I say, I was kind of confused when I saw it.
Lanks didn't respond either.
Oh, well, Lanks focus on the cricket. Let the cricket do the talking.
We've only got one game this season, haven't we? We haven't got the away leg, unfortunately. So,
will you be making the trip down? Yeah, I have to say, I mean, I don't know if I will be making the trip down to Edgbaston. Hopefully, I will later in the year for finals today. But, I mean, we'll have to see what happens. It'd be good to get down, but yeah, who knows? But yeah, that's pretty much enough about us just talking about T20 fixtures. We are actually joined by a special guest today. We are joined today by Worcestershire's all-round sensation, Ed Barnard. So, Ed, how are you doing?
Afternoon, lads. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I'm all right, thanks. It's a bit tired. We've just had our annual 2K time trial this morning, so it's got to that stage of the year where everyone's reporting back and it's sort of fitness testing galore, so the last couple of days have been quite heavy, so a bit of coughing might be going on, but I'm all well apart from that, thank you.
Yeah, I've had experiences of fitness testing in the past. Do you find it hard to do generally, or do you kind of just go with it? Do you find it hard to be motivated?
I don't think the motivation there. I think everyone's just sort of happy once it's out of the way, if you know what I mean. We all know that this stage of the year, we're going to have a week, we're going to have to get it done and sort of get our scores and whatever they want to get to us. But everyone just wants to get it done, get it out of the way, and then we can sort of crack on with the actual cricket part of the season, which obviously everyone wants to do, not running around the chat five
times. Exactly. Everybody wants to do cricket, watch cricket, play cricket, whatever. And it is only a month, just over a month now, until the first game. I'm sure you obviously have friendlies prepared. It's so, so good. I'm sure. Do you have any friendlies prepared? I don't even know clubs have announced.
I've seen a couple. I'm not sure if they're concrete, but I think Durham Uni, we're meant to be giving them a game, maybe a 3-day game at some point. And then I think we're doing a little trip sort of Somerset and Kent, if obviously COVID allows. But yeah, obviously we're usually the last sort of 6 years, apart from last year, we've been to Abu Dhabi. So everyone's a bit down because this is usually the time that we're getting on a plane and going out to 30 degrees for 10 days or so. So it's going to be a bit different with our 4 jumpers on at King's Taunton or Taunton Vale, wherever we're playing them.
No offence to Somerset, of course.
No offense, of course, but not quite the same climate.
Exactly, it is a bit of a change. But let's get into it then, shall we? Because we've kind of gone off on a little bit of a tangent there. So we'll begin then, Ed, right at the start of your cricketing journey. What are some of your first ever memories of cricket?
I was born and bred in Shrewsbury, obviously a couple hours north of Worcester, but my dad played a lot for Shrewsbury and Shropshire and played a bit of second team actually at Warwickshire. So obviously, went to watch him a lot down at the local club. I've got 2 older brothers, so I was always the one bowling or fielding and fetching it, so I probably didn't get to bat as much.
On the short straw.
That was the pecking order. But yeah, grew up around the boundary edge there and then got into playing at the cricket club from sort of as young as I can remember. Really. I reckon I might have played my first hardball when I was 6 or 7. I think I went along to Steve, my middle brother's under 10s game and they were one short, and I always had my kit in the car just in case. So I think I ended up fielding for 20 overs or in a pairs game. But yeah, they're sort of the youngest memories I've got of just being around the boundary edge and playing at my local crew club.
Fair enough.
Yeah, that's good. That's quite a family-oriented kind of introduction to cricket then. Moving away from kind of family though, who would you say some of your professional cricketing like idols were in those days? Was anyone who, and even a bit older, was anyone who you really looked up to?
I think it's probably the most generic answer you ever ask anybody our age of cricket, but Andrew Flintoff 2005 was obviously the one that sticks out the most. For me as well, wanting to be an all-rounder, caught, just watching him in that series just epitomised everything that any cricketer wants to be, smashing sixes, bowling quickly, taking catches. So yeah, I think in terms of an idol at that age, probably him. And then growing up, I used to love, I hate saying this, but I used to love watching Ian Bell play. obviously, he's not quite from the right side of the Midlands, but
I would disagree.
Obviously, glorious to watch on the eye. But yeah, they're probably the two main, but Flintoff definitely was the one that sticks out. And like I say, it's probably the most generic answer ever. And every cricket fan of my age or around that age probably says the same thing.
Good choices, though, there, Ed. In particular,
it's true, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
Exactly, one each from one of your counties as well. So
keep, yeah, there you go. Happy.
Exactly, yeah, keeping the two podcast hosts happy, 100%. And Ed, in terms of the 2005 series, we always mention this when guests bring it up, but what would you say was the defining moment? Which was the real highlight for you from that incredibly iconic series?
I think actually probably day one of Edgbaston, the second test, haven't been beaten and sort of all the hype around it before had been that we were going to give them a good game and then sort of McGrath sort of tore us apart in the S Lords. So I think there was this feeling that we might crumble from there. But for us to go out and I think we scored 400 in the day, didn't we? And to really show that intent and put out a bit of a marker. I remember Strauss whacking Warne over his head. I think it was first or second ball, and it just kind of put down a marker that we were going to put up a challenge. I think that sort of set the tone for the rest of the series in the summer.
Absolutely. And of course, Sir Andrew Strauss's birthday today. So happy birthday to Andrew Strauss, Chris Wokes and Will Rhodes. I mean, quite a few. And Jim Charlton, a former guest of ours. So a lot of cricketers' birthdays today on the 2nd of March. But yeah, what a series. It is iconic.
I think I've seen Strauss's catch about four times already this morning. So.
Didn't England share it?
All you have to do in a day like this, isn't it? Scroll through Twitter to see the same thing.
Yeah.
All you have to do.
Fair enough, though. It's a good catch. Like, you can't deny that. It's an absolute stunner.
Definitely. You can't deny it all.
No.
Nah, without a doubt. But let's kind of move the conversation back onto yourself then, Ed. What are some of your... Let's talk a little bit about county cricket. What are some of your first memories of county cricket?
So I started playing... I was contracted since I left school at 18 and then made my debut when I was 19, I think, and came into a... We were in Div 1 at the time and it was some tough cricket. I sort of played four or five games that year. It was tough at times because we weren't doing great and we ended up getting relegated that year. But it was amazing just to get that chance and sort of the two or three years building up to that, I'd hoped to make my debut at some point, obviously. So to actually do it, I did it at Hampshire away in a four-day game. It was quite special because I did it in the same game that Joe Clark made his debut. And me and Clark, he grew up since we were 10 playing together for Shropshire. And we lived together at the time, and so sort of we'd gone through the whole journey together. So that was quite special that we actually made our debut on the same day of the same game. It actually rained pretty much for that game, so that was a bit disappointing, but I managed to take a couple of wickets, which was a nice feeling. And then I played most of the white ball stuff that year, actually, which was quite a big eye-opener for me. I hadn't played much sort of 2020, proper high-standard 2020 cricket before that. And I made my debut at Edgbaston, which obviously is, for a Worcester player, it's probably the biggest occasion to play away at Edgbaston in front of 10,000, 15,000 fans. It was the first game in the T20. And it was nerve-wracking. I think I actually batted the highest I've ever batted in professional cricket. I ended up going out at 5 and got run out, which which wasn't the best start, but it was an amazing feeling to play. And just to stand on the boundary edge, obviously I've been lucky enough to do it quite a few times now at Edgbaston in front of the Hollies. It's a pretty special place to play. So yeah, the nerves are pretty high that day though. I remember being stood on the edge, and there was obviously you get a bit of jits in the crowd and stuff. Mm-hmm. So, but yeah, they're my first real memories of my introduction to county cricket.
Fair enough. And Ed, throughout today's podcast, we will of course bring up the Bears versus Pears rivalry, because it's the thing that we look out for. I mean, both of us, respective counties. It's in my calendar. It's the first thing that goes in. 9th of July at New Road, 16th of July, Edgbaston. I know them off the top of my head. Simple as that. It is the fixture. And we love the fixture. And of course, we'll talk about that in more depth as the podcast progresses. But I just wanted to go back to your time at Shropshire and the fact that you actually spent it with Joe Clark. Before we talk about Shropshire themselves as a minor county and your experiences in the minor county system, I wanted to ask a couple of questions about Joe Clark. And first of all, where do you think his ceiling is? Because we've been seeing him so impressive in T20 Blast cricket, brilliant for Notts. Remember in finals day this year, that outrageous shot against Saqib Mahmood in the semi-final. Oh my word.
Fortunately.
You say that. Oh, what a shot though.
I mean, it's a good shot. Sure, it's a good shot, but just a shame it was against Langs. He's a class player.
He is indeed. And it was a wonderful shot. And then of course, in the PSL for Karachi, he's been lighting the tournament on fire. So where do you think his ceiling is, Ed? Do you think that he can be an England player? What are your thoughts on Joe Clark as a batsman?
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think anybody who's watched him and played knows his quality. He's 24 and he's got 13, 14 first class hundreds already. And then you watch his white ball bat, and then you've seen the last 5-6 years in our domestic game, he's done it. He's scored hundreds, he's scored big runs. And then I'm really pleased for him that this year he's had the chance to go abroad and sort of get his name out there in other competitions. And obviously he had a bit of a taste of the Big Bash, which he didn't actually get much of a chance, unfortunately. But even the couple of innings he did play, played some ridiculous shots. Mm-hmm. This obviously the PSL going on, I've managed to watch a couple of his games and he's hitting the ball as cleanly as I've ever seen, really. But yeah, growing up with him, he was always the one that stood out. He's actually a bit of a late bloomer in terms of he didn't start playing cricket until he was about 9 or 10. But then sort of 12, 13, he came into our age group Shropshire side and just started dominating from the off. And he's always quite a confident sort of character. But he'd back it up. He'd be on the pitch. He'd be scoring hundreds. He'd be taking catches behind the stumps. His progression just sort of didn't stop. He just went up and up. So I think obviously it's not quite gone to plan the last few years for him, but I think he's really at a point now where he can kick on again. And I'm really hope that people give him that chance, because his ceiling, as you say, I don't think he's got one. I think he can be a top player for England.
100%. Yeah, I mean,
he's a class player.
Exactly. Myself and Joe rate Joe Clark very, very highly. He is a wonderful batsman and one of many at the moment in English domestic cricket. We're absolutely fortunate and blessed to have this wealth of talent in the T20 Blast so far. And it's going to be a brilliant season, 2021, which we'll, of course, talk about in due course. But just one final question about Joe Clark before we go on to your minor county experiences, Ed. Do you think that he could make the World Cup? Because you mentioned there he could play for England. We're talking in the foreseeable future. But do you think he could be an outside option, a dark horse, per se, for selection to India?
I think that's a difficult one. I think I'd love to say yes, I think he could. And there's always an outside chance. But I just think at the minute you look at the sort of the depth of that white ball batting that we've got in the England side, and you look at some of the players that aren't getting in the side, I think it'll be hard. I think it would take either him to have a phenomenal, phenomenal season or a couple of injuries for him to have a chance. But I think if he did end up in that side, he wouldn't let the side down. I think he'd do a good job. But as you said, there is just a ridiculous depth to white ball batting. And you look all around the country, there's players who aren't even anywhere near, who score runs for fun, who hit sixes for fun. I think it'll be tough for him, especially sort of it's so close to that tournament now, and that England white ball sort of setup seems to be quite settled. I think you even look at like sort of the whole Alex Hale situation. He can't even get a sniff back in when he's been dominating the last 2 years and even the Big Bash and stuff. I think if he did somehow end up in there, I don't think he'd let the side down at all.
I would agree with that. I think he's a quality player. But I do have to ask this. Since he's moved to Notts, have you got him out?
I haven't actually bowled at him since he's moved to Notts. We haven't played against him that many times, and I think
last year you were in the same group.
Hmm. Yeah, and then I think 1950 over game, I didn't get a chance to bowl at him, and then obviously the T20 when we beat them in Finals Day, he didn't bat, which was we found very strange. He didn't even make it to the crease. And then we haven't played them in Red Bull cricket since. So it'll be, I think they're in our group this year, and I think they're one of our first games. So I think it'll be a good
this
battle.
Year's your chance. Mm.
I think there'll be a bit of an extra edge when I'm bowling in, which will be good fun.
Interesting. Yeah. I'll skip that. A watch.
He did. He ran me out though in that final day. He ran me out, which I wasn't appreciated.
Did he give you some stick for after?
I think he just laughed. I've never seen him hit the stumps before with a throw ever in 10 years. So I think I was pretty unlucky, to be honest.
Well, that is certainly an interesting battle then to look out for Worcester and Notts fans. Of course, they're going to be watching the game anyway, whether that's at the ground or on a stream. But definitely keep an eye out for that battle because it will certainly be interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, the battle of the former Shropshire teammates. And of course, we do have to talk about Shropshire because we have brought up minor counties on the podcast before. Of course, Jake Lintott, former guest, he played for Wiltshire before moving to Warwickshire and playing in county cricket. So, Ed, I just wanted to know, what were your experiences like in minor county cricket? And also, in addition to that, apart from the experiences themselves, do you think they actually helped you on your way to becoming a professional cricketer? Or do you think that there could be some areas of minor county cricket which could be improved in order to help that process per se?
Yeah, I think I didn't actually play that much first team at Shropshire just because by the time I was sort of at an age to play, I'd already made it into the sort of Worcester setup. But growing up as a minor county, sort of, we used to love when we played against first class counties, even like at age group cricket. And we were fortunate enough to have a very strong side, especially for a minor county. So we always punched about our weight, which was nice. And it was always nice when we went to place Warwickshire or some of the bigger first class counties and beat them. But yeah, I think you just have to look around county cricket. There's a lot of players that have at some point played minor county cricket, and it's a great step, that sort of step between good club cricket and first class cricket, because there is a gap. There's quite a big gap, I'd say, between club cricket and first class cricket. So it allows just for whether it be youngsters who are still making their way and maybe haven't been picked up in a system or who are on an academy, it gives them a chance to go and play some good men's cricket. I know Elliot Wilson, our academy director, he's trying to build some strong links with Herefordshire and maybe like Staffordshire, so the minor counties around us, so that we can get some of our sort of 15, 16, 17-year-olds who aren't maybe quite ready for second team and first team cricket at the club to go and play some really good cricket. But also you get the club cricketers that have been around for 10, 15 years who maybe might not quite have been good enough or might have been unlucky not to play first-class cricket, who know their game inside out and are high-quality cricketers. And it's a good chance for them to test their skills at as high a level as they can play. But yeah, I think it's a hard setup, especially when you've got blokes who are sort of working and trying to get time off work. I know a lot of the teams struggle sometimes in the 3-day fixtures to try and get their best sides up just because of people have got to make a living, and obviously it's not the easiest way to do it. That probably is the only thing you'd have to look at, is how it's structured and how you can get your best players playing as much as possible.
Good answer. Very, very good answer. And I suppose I just wanted to relate this question to something that Joe brought up a while ago. Would you be in favour of somehow integrating the minor counties into one of the, you know, the usual quote-unquote first-class county tournaments? So, for example, the RL50, the Royal London One Day Cup, maybe a kind of, you know, separate round-robin tournament. Would you be in favour of having, like, Shropshire, Staffordshire, Wiltshire, Devon, for example, Cheshire, playing against... Yeah, Cheshire, of course, Joe. Shouldn't forget them, as seeing as they're your county. But would you be in favour of having these minor counties play against the first-class counties in a way? And if so, how would you actually go about doing it?
I think so. And I think so, because my dad played for Shropshire a lot, he's got some great stories of obviously they used to play the Benson Hedges or whatever the cup competition there was. It was like the FA Cup, wasn't it? They'd get drawn in that. And he's got some great stories about playing against Yorkshire and playing against the great Lancashire side and playing against like Viv Richards, and people would be down at Wellington, which is a local club in Shropshire. And they got great turnouts, and I think if you could get to a point like that, you probably wouldn't get the calibre like they did in those days. It's probably structured a bit differently now, county cricket, but if you can get them, whether it be an FA Cup start, I've heard that banded around a few times, and I just think it'd be great. Imagine coming out sort of first round and being drawn to, I don't know, Devon away and having to go down there and try and win a 50-over game to qualify or something. I think it would be not only for us as a first-class county, it's a different challenge. Also for those sort of counties, if Cobb Grand, you can get a good crowd in, you can sort of make it a big sort of payday, you can charge tickets, whatever it is, and you get some beautiful Cobb Grounds as well. That's the only other thing. Some of the other grounds you play at, it would be another chance to play at some different grounds around the country. I think actually we're playing, I've got a feeling we're playing game before the 50-over comp this year, maybe against Herefordshire or someone as sort of a warm-up. So I think, I don't know whether that's a nationwide thing, whether everyone's doing that, or whether that's just we've organised one just to get a bit of practice.
No, I think that's a nationwide thing.
I think so, yeah. Right. So I think I'm looking forward to that. It'll be a nice sort of chance to get to another club ground and play some good cricket. And it also gives us a proper sort of practice match before we go into the full 50-over stuff, which is sometimes, it can be sometimes quite hard when you're changing formats and you go into one format without an actual, apart from playing with, between yourselves, you don't get that fully blown competitive practice.
Interesting. And I know, Joe, of course, you'd be in favour of that because you've mentioned that FA Cup style tournament here on the podcast. I mean, would you enjoy that? I mean, imagine a Lancs versus Cheshire. Who would you actually support in that particular game?
Lancs, all day. I only play for a club in Cheshire, so like that. Rob, really
Jones, Rob Jones is a big, he's a big Cheshire boy, isn't he?
Yeah, I grew up. That'd be Cheshire for Rob Jones.
We played against each other since we were about 9 or 10, Shropshire against Cheshire. He always used to be, that's always been a bit of a battle, so I know Jonesy really well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, as you said, that would be a big one for him because he still plays for a club in Cheshire right now. So, yeah, that'd be an interesting game for some players. As you say, that local, it's really local derbies. Like, obviously, Lancs, Yorkshire's a derby, but it's not like a local derby as such, is it? It's not close. Huh? Yeah, well, yeah, yours is obviously
different. Our one 100% is.
Bordering counties. But Lancs and Yorkshire aren't really like that close, like an hour's drive. So, yeah, I guess that would be quite interesting to maybe add some more competitive derbies, even though they're almost not hatred, but I don't know, derby hatred wouldn't really be there in that kind of a game. It would still be good to see. So yeah, it'd be interesting.
I think it'd be good as well because obviously a lot of us still play club cricket, and a lot of the time you get the contracted players playing in club cricket, and you get lads sort of given a bit of stick, and maybe people who haven't quite made it who'd have liked to, and so giving them a chance to sort of go up against, and if you know what I mean, and give that sort of an actual structure to a competition like that might drive a few people on a bit as well.
Absolutely, of course. It would add, I know this is very cliche seeing as this is a cricket podcast, but a bit of an edge. It'd add a bit of spice, a bit of rivalry, as Joe rightfully said. It would be interesting, and of course we'll have to wait and see. I personally would love that from the ECB. I mean, we've mentioned there about derbies. We already have our local one. But can you imagine like Somerset coming up against Devon, for example? That'd be a good one. I mean, Cheshire versus Lancs, another one. The Welsh minor counties as well, coming up against Glamorgan, taking on the big boys. Would be interesting. Would be very, very interesting. And of course, we'll have to wait and see if that ever does come to fruition. But yeah, it would be very, very interesting indeed. Would make for some spicy matches down the line in both a minor and a first-class county sense. But talking of first-class counties, Ed, you mentioned there about outgrounds. What do you say is your favourite outground in the county circuit right now? What do you say is your real top one, or top three, if you want to choose them?
That's a good one, actually. I don't think Joe's going to like my first answer. I think Scarborough is probably some of the best cricket.
Hey, Scarborough's a good ground. Scarborough's still a good ground. Can't knock Scarborough.
We played there in 2018, I think. And it was a roasting hot week. And they get obviously thousands of people there up in the stands and stuff, and we smashed them. We absolutely chanced them. Mo got a 200 and 10 wickets in the game, I think. But yeah, that was one of the best weeks of cricket that I've played in. Sort of that whole atmosphere. They had a good side out. Kane Williamson was playing for them. I remember it was Dylan Pennington. It was one of his first games, and he bowled one of the best spells I've ever seen at Kane Williamson. And I think by the end of it, the Yorkshire fans were giving the Yorkshire team more stick than they were giving us. So that's one of my favourite outgrounds I've played at. I'm trying to think. We played Southport, I think we played, Lancashire at.
Yeah. Southport is a very, very good ground.
An interesting one. It was obviously very different to Old Trafford. And then the other one is Cheltenham. Cheltenham, we're lucky. Most years we sort of play during the Cheltenham Festival against Gloucester. And that's a real we really enjoy that with the 10th all round on the school ground. It's very impressive and tend to be good cricket wickets as well. They tend to be some good games that we've had there. So, yeah, I think they're definitely Cheltenham and Scarborough up there for me, and the ones I've played at.
100%. Cheltenham, I've said it so many times on the podcast, thoroughly, thoroughly recommend. It's my favourite outground personally, because as you said, the backdrop of the college itself, the people there as well, it's just such a friendly vibe. And as you said, yeah, it makes for some really compelling and really good, entertaining cricket. It's a fantastic wicket there at the college. Really is. Love going to the Cheltenham Festival when I have an opportunity. But I suppose we have to talk now, Ed, a little bit about a certain rivalry that happens in the West Midlands, the one which we alluded to earlier, and that is, of course, the Bears versus Pears rivalry. And before we go into more details about like your experiences in these derbies, first of all, what does it mean to you as a Worcestershire player? What does the Bears versus Pears rivalry mean to Ed Barnard?
Well, it's obviously huge. I think growing up in the Worcester Academy, and even going back to my Shropshire days a little bit, we used to play against Warwickshire as a Shropshire side, and being, like I said before, being the minor county, playing against this sort of big first class county, you always wanted to get one over on them. And then, yeah, coming through the academy, it's always been like, you don't have to know that much about cricket to know about how big the rivalry is, and sort of especially the games at Edgbaston are special because of how impressive the ground is. But then the games we play at New Road, because we're a bit of a smaller ground and it does get filled, you get people standing behind the back, and it's a bit more intimidating, I think, I can imagine, for some of the Warwickshire players sometimes. And we've missed out on that the last couple of years because of COVID. So hopefully this year we can have fans back in, and especially the next couple of years, it can get a little bit rowdy and it just spurs you on. And there's just that extra bit of edge to it, really. And we've sort of been, luckily enough, I reckon, over the last 4 or 5 years since I've been playing, we sort of had the edge over Warwickshire. Unfortunately, last year, I think we did the double over us. So
we did.
I think that's one thing we're going to have to put right this year. But yeah, touch wood so far. I reckon I've been on the Worcester winning side more than I haven't.
Yeah,
unfortunately, not cursed it.
To be fair, yeah, I'm just trying to think. Before 2020 at Edgbaston, I think the last time we beat Worcester was 2016. It's 2017. Yeah, Tomo had that last ball six. 2018, Moeen scored a century. 2019. Moeen again smashed 85, not out against us, and we got hammered by 9 wickets. I think defending 185 as well. Like, how on earth we lost that by 9 wickets? I'm still baffled. And apparently someone saw me on the Sky cameras as well, just head in hand. So that should explain everything about that particular night down at the Fortress. But I wanted to touch upon something in particular there, because you mentioned about the atmosphere of Edgbaston. And I've noticed a group of fans from Worcestershire who call themselves the Barney Army. Okay, and they have chants for you, Ed. So what do you know about the Barney Army? And if so, how big of an influence do they have on you in terms of their support in a Bears versus Pears derby?
I wouldn't say they're the rowdiest of folk. They're a bit... they're actually probably more from the four-day cricket than they come. We've got an older core of members, supporters who kind of come home and away, and they're amazing. They travel absolutely everywhere with. They'll have their hotels booked 6 months ahead. They make it a real social occasion. They do stuff in the evenings and things. And yeah, I think a couple of years ago, I think I had a couple of all right games and someone rocked up to one of the games and they had these T-shirts, obviously in the Barney Army, but someone had tinkered with it, said the Barney Army. And I think I've got a photo somewhere where someone made me have a photo with them. So it was a bit cringe, but obviously it's really nice to see. And they are a big part of county cricket, that sort of following that we have, especially to the four-day stuff, that they come home and away. They sort of show you what it means to be a county cricketer, especially at Worcester. It's a very family-run, traditional club, and there's a lot of traditions that still go on. So I think it's pretty special to have them there. And yeah, it's a good laugh when I see someone with that T-shirt.
I was going to say, it did make me laugh, to be fair. It was quite funny. And of course, with regards to the Barney Army, hopefully we will see them back in 2021, of course, with all of us as fans. That's the thing, you kind of miss those kind of things. And another one which I remember from Edgbaston, the Nathan Buck Fan Army, which is probably one of the most original ones, one of the most strange ones as well. Joe, would you want to be part of the Nathan Buck Fan Army?
Well, I don't support Northants, so...
Fair enough. I don't think we have any at Warwickshire. We do have songs, though. We have plenty of songs, obviously, in the Eric Holly stand, which is absolutely incredible. And Ed, I suppose just before we move on about your general Worcestershire career as a whole, really, I just wanted to ask you, what's your favourite Bears versus Pears moment? What do you say is a real standout from your time in those derbies so far?
Oh, that's a good one. There was a game we played, it might have been 18 or 19, we beat you at home. And yeah, it was a blazing hot day and we had a real good crowd in. And it was quite a close game, I think, in the end, and we managed to win it. And that really sticks out. I can't remember if it was either 18 or 19. But then in terms of, we actually, the other one that sticks in my head is a 50-over game that we won at your place. The infamous Keith Barker slip, unfortunately for him. I don't think he'll ever live that one down. And he bowled ridiculously well and pretty much got you back in a position to win the game. I think we were chasing maybe we were chasing 300 odd. Mo had whacked 100, of course.
Unsurprisingly.
We'd had a proper sort of yip, and we'd gone from needing 20 to win 5 down to we were 9 down. I remember I just ran one down to third man, and I was probably going to struggle to get back for 2 because we had our number 11, and unfortunately both feet went from underneath him and kind of trickled over the boundary, and we won that game. And it was pretty much a quarter final that game as well, because I think the winner went through to the semi, so that was I remember that one being pretty special.
Yep, I do remember that one. But yeah, it is a good rivalry, and of course we do have some iconic moments over the years. I still think back to last year as well, Jake Lintott's run out of Ben Cox. That was pretty good. And I suppose, Ed, seeing as you would have seen that, was that out or not?
I don't know. A third umpire might have been useful, but I'm not sure. You never know. I know Ben was pretty adamant that Coxie can sometimes be adamant about things when he's not right. So, I don't know. I think it's one of those. The umpire thinks you see something, then you've just got to trust him at the end of the day. But yeah, it was big in the moment, obviously. Jake had a fantastic year for Warwich last year, so it seems that everything he did sort of seemed to go right for him.
Absolutely, yeah. And of course, 3-year deal now at the Fortress. I mean, what a story that is. And of course, for those who haven't checked out the Jake Lintott pod, go ahead. Really, really interesting character. He really is. And Ed, just talking about your time at Worcestershire then, if we're going to go in retrospect now, what do you say has been your proudest moment? I can think of a couple. Of course, one of them at Fortress Edgbaston in 2018. We alluded to it earlier. Against Sussex, but what do you say has been your real highlight from your time with the Rapids so far?
Yeah, I think you can't winning a trophy is everything you want to do as a cricketer. When you come in, you want to be playing in the big games and you want to be competing for trophies. So we'd sort of built up a couple of years before that, we'd got to knockout stages and we were starting to get that tag that we never won knockout games. So we obviously are going on and winning that, and we had lost in the semi of the 50-over final to Kent in sort of heartbreaking fashion when we last over Hino Kuhn and batted amazingly. So there, after having all that the previous couple of seasons, to then get to finals day, beat a very strong Lancashire side in the semi-final, which kind of once we did that, it was sort of, we felt no one could stop us. And again, Sussex were extremely strong. They had
not even Archer.
Ridiculous bowling attack. And luckily, yeah, we managed to put it all together, and yeah, just that evening is easily the highlight of my career so far, and something that hopefully we can replicate again. Obviously, we went very close to next year, heartbreakingly the other way, thanks to Simon Harmer. But yeah, I think I can't top that. There's been some really good times, but nothing will top that at all.
Yeah, I mean, it must be pretty incredible to lift the trophy, but yeah. That semi-final, still annoyed about that. It's one of them. To be honest, in that day, I was very confident of winning the whole thing, as I'm sure every side was, like every supporter was. But I was especially confident because I just thought Lancs were... I was very cocky. It's very cocky on me looking back at it, but I thought Lancs were pretty much invincible. Not in a cricketing sense, obviously. Not in a general sense.
Didn't we beat you that season?
And just in general, I thought on paper our squad looked the strongest. On that finals day, I thought we were going to be invincible. Obviously, we weren't. But it got to a point where it was one of them games, really, where the momentum kept shifting, didn't it? And I remember, I can't remember who he got out, but I remember Parky got someone out stumped.
Oh, yeah.
I think he got Dolly and Ross quite quickly.
I think it was. Yeah, I think that's right.
I think we were quite lucky, really, because I think, I can't remember if we won the toss, but I got a feeling we might have lost the toss, and I think we were going to bowl, but it actually, the wicket didn't quite play as well as we thought, and it, all day it really, it turned and was a bit slower than we thought, so it sort of suited us. Obviously, Mo was bowling really well at the time, and Brownie, no one had worked out what to do with Brownie and his slow ball, so I think in a weird way, it sort of helped us bowling second. And I remember Mo getting Butler out, and just at that point.
Oh yeah, that's kind of when it flipped for me.
Such a big thing. Yeah,
that's kind of
a big thing.
Yeah, because I think the big thing from that game was certainly from when we were batting was right from the start, Butler didn't open. It was Davis and Livingston, which I was in favour of. I wanted them to open, but I think a lot of people, like, we were sitting with the Lancs fans because we bought tickets with Lancs, and a lot of people were like complaining at that, and I was thinking like, that's fine. Like, don't break up your own partnership who have done so well. And then I thought Butler can come in and hit the winning runs if he needs it. And that went well. So, yeah, it got to the end when Jennings needed to hit like 36 off the last over or something like that. And I think he hit sixes in a row.
He did. He hit.
And I kind of got a little bit.
Of us were like, oh, no.
Surely I kind not. Of thought there's no. And then he top edged one and got out. And that was it. So. Yeah, it was disappointing, but I mean, the Worcestershire were incredible that day, and Ben Cox in that final, is that the best innings you've ever seen him play? Because he hit the winning runs off Archer, no? I think that's who we pulled for four.
Yeah, I think so. I think sort of both the innings really, in the semi obviously he got 50, not out to get us to a decent score, and then that innings in the final, I was lucky enough to be there at the end. I think Ross got out when we needed about 25 or 30 twins, so I walked out thinking, oh no, like, Jordan, Archer, like, this is going to be a tough
this is
tough
not
thing.
The type that's about.
I think I literally only faced one or two balls because Coxie just got on with it, and before you knew it, we'd gone from needing 20 to he'd won it in the space of about 10 balls. So, yeah, that feeling when he pulled Archer away for four. I remember I didn't know what was happening. I ran up to him, picked him up, and I'm not the strongest bloke, and he's quite a big bloke, so I sort of regret that straight away. and then everyone was running on and everyone was jumping on my bat. And at one point, I got annoyed because we won my bat. And then I was like, what am I on about? We just won the T20. Forget about your bat.
Did you get a stump?
I did, yeah. Luckily, I managed to get one of the stumps. So.
Yeah, that's good. I think stumps are pretty...
My locker somewhere.
Yeah, stumps are a pretty exclusive thing to be able to get. Obviously, there's only six of them. So if you get a stump, then you're pretty lucky.
Yeah, I managed to. I think being out there helped just to nick one.
Yeah, just grab it quickly, yeah. Yeah, fair enough.
Tell you what a finals day though. What a finals
day. Yeah, that was 18. I think that's one of the best finals days in recent years because just as like a neutral, even though Lance lost, because of the some of the performances with the bat especially. Remember Luke Wright hit, was it 92 that he got? 94 or something like that.
Didn't he?
Yeah. There were some seriously good players that day.
Let's not forget 2019 as well. Derbyshire going in there for the first time in their history. That semi-final as well, I wanted to touch upon that day as a whole, really, Ed. And we have to talk about the semi-final because, of course, now Ben Duckett has completed the redemption cycle. He's done that in 2020 for Notts. But on that day, what's going through your head in that semi-final? Because it is one of the most bizarre semi-finals I think we've seen in recent years. In particular, the ending. What was actually going through your head while that game was going on?
Yeah, it's a funny one, really. I'd say for 15 overs of that second innings, I was probably planning what we were going to do in the afternoon because we weren't going to be playing in the final because it looked Hales was whacking it and obviously they were just smashing it and there didn't seem like any chance of us winning. And then all of a sudden things just started to happen that you thought, oh, well, that kind of tells you that they're a little bit nervous and things might be going our way. And then towards the end, it was just absolutely crazy. Obviously, we were still hugely not favourites, hugely second favourites to win it. And I think it was the second last ball I was doing deep cover and Samet hit one out to me. And it was the easiest two ever. It was the longest two any other time in cricket that had got to, that had been level. It would have been game over because they had lost less wickets, I think. But for some reason, they didn't take that run. And then obviously what happened. And it was, again, Coxie, an amazing piece of keeper to stand up to the stumps to someone bowling that pace. And then we just saw the euphoria of that was having gone from 90% of the game looking like we weren't going to be anywhere near to winning it and being in another final. Just kind of, it was one of the craziest games I've ever played. And I felt sorry for Ducky. I know Ducky really well. I played quite a bit of cricket with him. And he played really well up until obviously just the last couple of those things just didn't quite go his way. And I think we had good plans as much as anything as well. We kept it simple. Mo's, he's an amazing captain at people keeping people calm at times, and very fortunate to have played under him for a lot of cricket. So yeah, that was one of the stranger games of cricket, but obviously turned out on the right side for us.
Yeah. It was an incredible semi-final. It really was. What a semi-final that was. And of course, with Ben Duckett, as we mentioned, completed the redemption cycle. Fantastic for Ben Duckett. And it was a real feel-good story of 2020. Given the heartbreak of 2019, there were two brilliant pictures. One of him celebrating in 2020 and 2019, just a comparison. Really, really good story that for Ben Duckett. And of course, the final, because the final itself was absolutely extraordinary. Like, I'm a neutral in this, fair enough. Maybe on the day, I'm going to be honest, was rooting for Essex. Purely because of that Warwickshire Worcestershire.
I was rooting for Worcester, by the way. I was rooting for Worcester.
Well, you were still annoyed about Durham, weren't you?
Yeah.
About Bapara and that over from Livingston. But yeah, what was going through your head, in particular in those final two overs? What was actually going through your mind at that point, Ed? Were you confident that you're going to see it out? In particular, Wayne Parnell at the death. Very, very good death bowler, been fantastic for the Rapids for the past couple of seasons. What's going through your mind in that scenario?
I think we were, I was very confident that we were going to win, especially going into two or three overs. I think we were pretty much favourites, but obviously Ravi Bapara was still there and he's just got better and better and better, obviously. And I reckon he's one of the best players in county cricket there is at the minute. So yeah, you always knew that there was danger with him at the crease, but the last couple of overs, we got it to a point where we looked like we should win. And again, having Parnie, having done it early in the day and having won the year before, I think a lot of the lads sort of had that confidence that in these tight games, we could get over the line. But then obviously Harmer came out and just, again, for him, he's such an incredible player and everything he'd touched that day had turned to gold. He was turning it square. He was taking catches. He was captaining them brilliantly. And then, yeah, he came out and struck those couple down the ground. And it was heartbreak. It really was heartbreak because complete opposite to the semi-final where we sort of managed to win from the jaws of defeat. We managed to go from pretty much being favourites to win to then it's gone before your eyes and you've lost. And that was crushing. That was really heartbreaking. The worst thing actually was straight away after I was nominated to be one of the drugs testers. So I had to spend the next hour in a room with the blokes trying to get a urine sample out. So I was already pretty depressed and the thing to then have that for an hour afterwards. Yeah, just kind of compounded it a little bit. But yeah, just to even be there again, to be in the final and to have got that close was pretty proud. And not many teams have gone back to back. So to be that close to doing it, we were once the sort of misery and hurt of losing had gone away, I think we all sat back and were really proud of what we'd done.
Fair enough. And of course, that story there just reminded me of Darren Maddy. The exact same thing happened to him in 2012. So you've lost the final, but with him, I think it took him right up until midnight before they were happy with the sample that he produced. I mean, word. Why do they choose it right after with a losing team?
Yeah, I think obviously there's reason we do it and you can't stop them doing it, but You just know when you see them there, you just fingers crossed that your name isn't read out because the last thing you want to do is that. But
I was going to say, yeah. Funny story though. And of course, what a final. What a final. One of those real iconic moments, Harmer winning it in fantastic fashion. And to be fair, Wayne Parnell as well, who you could tell had given his absolute all. He was pretty much on his knees by the end of that. Like, he had given every single ounce of energy. It was a fantastic way to end what was a fantastic tournament, really, 2019. Fair enough, maybe not from Warwickshire or Birmingham, as we're known in the T20. Now, maybe not from our perspective, but as a whole, what a tournament it really was. And then I suppose we have to ask on the flip side of that, Ed. We've spoken there about the proud moments. Yes, we've just touched upon a tough moment there with regards to 2019 and finals day. But for you personally, from a personal perspective, what do you say has been your toughest moment from your time in county cricket so far?
I think probably... So at times last season, I think 2020, I think to start with just with COVID and all that and everything that went along with that for just as a human being, really, it made it really tough not knowing what was happening, not knowing when we could train again, not when we could play again. And then obviously once we got into this season, The 4-day stuff, obviously, we got really well and we were really pleased with how we went for that. But the 2020, just, yeah, our campaign never really got going. And to sort of, to have the chance to captain was something I'd wanted to do for a long time, and I was really pleased to do it, and I really enjoyed it. But it was certainly tough at times, and we didn't play our best cricket. We had a different side. We missed a couple of us. Obviously, Parnie didn't come back. Mo didn't play at all, which are two huge losses. So, yeah, it was just kind of, there were times during that campaign where it got quite tough and not easy to get up and go again. But I think it's all great learnings. I think hopefully if I get a chance to do it again at some point in the future, I think I'll learn from that. And just for my cricket, really, to go forward, I'd love to progress again from there. The actual, personally, I didn't feel like my T20 went too badly last year. I still took quite a few wickets and I managed to get a few runs here and there. But yeah, I think just the whole campaign was a bit disappointing, really, overall, especially having come from the previous 2 years where there'd been such highs and we'd done so well. It was a bit of a crashing down to earth, sort of bit of a reality check, I think.
Yeah, it was a very strange one, wasn't it, in 2020, because we almost switched ends in a way. I know we obviously went out in heartbreaking fashion to Northants in the end with that fantastic 50 from Tom Taylor. But I couldn't believe it with the Rapids in 2020 to have been so dominant and then to finish bottom of the central group. As you said, it never really got going. There are opportunities and moments where Worcestershire looked really, really good. I must admit, I'll say that as a Bears fan, that you looked like you were going to win at least another two or three games, but it just never came to fruition. And you mentioned there, Ed, about captaincy. How did you actually approach the captaincy role at Worcestershire County Cricket Club? Did you draw on the experiences from playing in the Mowing Alley, for example, or did you have any other influences or role models, people that you really picked aspects and attributes from, per se? How did you approach the captaincy role for the Rapids?
It was an interesting one, really. I sort of, yeah, tried to take a lot of what Mo had done. Obviously, it's not easy to replicate Mo. Obviously, Mo comes with a whole stature. He's got, obviously, everything that comes with him as a cricketer. But he's also a very laid-back person and a very good speaker. So I think I tried to take bits of what he'd done, but obviously I wanted to do it in my own way as well. I'm a different person to Mo. I've got different sort of strengths and weaknesses to him. So I think for me, I wanted to lead a bit more with sort of energy and things and like in the field and things like that. And I just found it tough at times, and I think it's still something I'm learning at how to sort of lead a group of men. And it's not something I've done a lot. I did a lot of age group cricket, but that's a bit different, really. I think there's probably a lot more that goes with it now. So yeah, it's definitely something that I've sat down and spoke to coaches. I spoke to people this winter about it, about what I did well, what I didn't do so well, and how I can go forward, really. So I think, yeah, as much as it is about learning from people who you've worked under and you've watched on TV, maybe, I think it's just as much about finding as much about yourself as you can and finding what works for you.
Absolutely. And that's something that Jack Taylor mentioned on one of our previous podcasts, because obviously he was led by Michael Klinger, an absolute legend in recent county cricket memory. So it is interesting. I always do like to find out a bit more about the approach to captaincy. And you mentioned there in terms of man management, because this is a real key aspect of cricket captaincy. How did you actually find that? How did you actually find having to adapt to different personality traits and types? I know, obviously, you've spent a lot of time with these guys in the same dressing room, but how did you actually go about managing them and managing them to their best ability?
Yeah, I probably found that a bit tough. I think it's very different playing with people and sort of getting along with people as it is to them having to captain and lead and tell people what they're doing or where they're doing it, especially when things aren't going well. I think when you're losing games of cricket, it makes it a lot harder and to sort of have those conversations with people and have the difficult conversations. But yeah, it's just about trying to find that sort of middle ground, if you know what I mean. And I spoke to actually Daryl Mitchell about it, about how he did it. And he was just like, you've just got to be sort of honest whenever you're speaking to someone in that sort of thing, whatever you're talking about with the cricket, you've just got to be honest and make sure you have a reason. Because I think if I know as a player, if I got told something and then asked a question about it and you sort of found a stump, it would be a lot harder to take. Whereas if you can keep it sort of clear and concise and give a good reason, whether they agree with that reason or not, it's a different story. But as long as you've got sort of reasoning for doing things, I think that's the best way you can go about it.
100%. And great advice for any young and upcoming captains, It really is. In terms of leadership, you have to be so clear and concise with regards to dropping in particular, because that is one of the hardest things to do to any sports person. It really is to be told that you're not going to play for your county. So, yeah, I quite like that, Ed. And as I said, very, very sound advice for any young and upcoming captains out there listening to today's podcast.
Yeah, without a doubt. So let's kind of, let's go down a little bit of a similar vein then in terms of the toughest moments with your time at Worcester. So who would you say the toughest batsman that you've bowled to so far is in any format? Who would you say that is?
I remember we played Surrey in a 50-over quarterfinal, one of them. And Sangakkara got 70 off about maybe 60 balls. And that was, I remember he just ran at me and hit me over my head a couple of times, sort of out of nowhere. Like, he was quite used to the crease, and I think I'd then just come on and he didn't waste any time. So, yeah, that was tough. Again, Jai Wardner, he got 100 against us for Somerset in a knockout game, which he just made, as a bowler, made you feel a bit foolish. Whatever you tried to do to him or bowl to him, he sort of had an answer and just made it look ridiculously easy. And then the other one who I've kind of had mixed success against, and Joe, you're like this one, Liam Livingston, he is very tough to bowl at, because in terms of, you know exactly what he's going to try and do. So in terms of trying to make plans, it feels like you should be able to, but he does it so well. And when it comes off, he hits it so hard and so far.
He hits it a long way, doesn't he?
Extremely demoralising as a bowler.
Yeah, it's outrageous. Have you ever bowled, because it's happened against Worcester, I've seen it. I think it was Pat Brown actually who bowled the deliveries, and he ramped Pat Brown offside and legside within like consecutive deliveries or something. So that was pretty incredible. But there is one kind of thing to do with Liam Livingston that I want to talk about. It is the catch that you took at Old Trafford in 2019. Now, for me personally, it's the best catch I've ever seen at a ground. Probably, I would say it's up there with the best catch I've ever seen at a ground or on TV. It was outrageous.
Yeah,
do you want to talk us through that catch? Because I would say it's exceptionally hard to get Livingston out. I think it was Wayne Parnell who was bowling at the time, and then you pull off this one-handed blinder. Do you want to explain a little bit about it?
The rest of that evening isn't memorable at all, as I sort of mentioned before. I think you absolutely smashed us that game, but yeah, Livingston had come out and was whacking it everywhere, and it ramped. I think it was Wayne ramped him two or three times in a row, sort of both sides of the keeper, and we hadn't got many runs on the board. And then Parney, I was at deep square, and I think literally that ball, Parney moved me about 20 yards from in front of square. He moved me to behind square. He hit it in my general vicinity, and I just sort of, when I first started sprinting, I was like, I'm just going to have to fetch this out of the stands. And then sort of the closer I got, I was like, just chuck yourself at it, you never know. And yeah, luckily enough, it stuck, and yeah, I don't think I'd ever be able to do it again, I'm not going to lie, but I was pretty proud of that one, yeah, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah, I mean, as I said, it was an outrageous catch.
Whenever people say about catches, it's just, sometimes they just stick.
Yeah. And as I say, it was an outrageous catch. But was it the best catch that you took that season? Because was it in the first game at Trent Bridge that you took that catch?
Yeah, against Jake Libby.
Libby, who is now obviously your current teammate. Do you think that catch was better? Because that was also an absolute screamer.
I do. I think the Livingston one's probably a little bit better. I think it came a bit quicker. But the Jake Libby one, I think I'd bowled the previous over and I was jogging back to long off. And I think Mo had already bowled pretty much as I turned around, and I saw him hit it, obviously in my area. And I was like, oh, for God's sake, like I could have done with just a 5 second breather it. So again, I just sort of sprinted after it and launched myself at it. And again, luckily it just stuck, and it just seemed to be, they both happened within about 3 or 4 days of each other. So I that turned out to be quite a good evening. So. Again, it just stuck, and I was pretty pleased with that one. I've always enjoyed playing there. At Trent Bridge, it's always similar to Edgbaston. You get a really good crowd there, and the atmosphere is brilliant. It's a very, very fun atmosphere to play in. And again, we've done quite well there as a side. So yeah, that's one of my favourite grounds to play at.
Fair enough.
Yeah, it is a great ground, Trembridge. It is. There is one thing about Trembridge that always confuses me is the stand that's kind of like tucked in a little bit behind. It looks like it's behind a building, but I've never been to Trembridge. I couldn't say whether it's like whether you can even see the game. But do you know which bit I'm on about? It's like kind of tucked behind.
It's a strange shape, especially sort of.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're on about, but then you've got the big sort of the newish stand next to the pavilion, which kind of just seems to cut a corner off and.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly.
You feel like you're going circle and then not, and they tend to be because of that. They get a lot of short boundaries there, and obviously there've been some big scores there, so it makes for some entertainment.
England have made the most of it. Mm. Yeah, England have definitely.
Yeah, they did, didn't they?
That's for sure. That is for sure. Twice. That is for sure. And Australia doing and New Zealand, neither of them particularly like playing there, I should imagine. But back onto yourself then, Ed. Kind of flip that question on its head a little bit. So we talked about the toughest batsman that you've bowled to. What about the toughest bowler that you faced when batting?
There's a few. Probably Chris Rushworth. When we played against Durham sometimes on a couple of green teamers, and he's unplayable when he gets on. Well, he's obviously a fine bowler on any surface, but if you get him with a brand new Duke's ball on a green teamer, he's pretty unplayable. Jofra. We played against Jofra for Sussex at home. Must have been 2016 or 17, and on a tired wicket, and we were trying to bat out on day four, and that was some of the toughest cricket I saw. People get hit pretty much every other ball in the chest and the arm and the head. No, we made that. We're nowhere near. I think we got rolled just after lunch. That was tough as well. I think those two are the two that really stick out. Again, the Lancashire. Jimmy Anderson bowled a spell at us 2 years ago, which I think seems to get shown on Twitter a lot, where he took him and Onions pretty much bowled us out in a session. And yeah, that was tough.
Yeah, age is just a number. Those two proving there.
Exactly.
Age is just a number. What about spinners as well? What about spin-wise? Obviously, you just mentioned three fast bowlers. What about spinners?
I can think of
I've actually probably been lucky enough to play with some amazing spinners. I've been lucky enough to play with...
Yeah.
Ashwin and Lyons are probably the two best spinners in the world at the minute. And at the start of my career, I played with Syed Ajmal, who just used to make people look silly. I probably didn't quite see the best of Adji. The sort of the year or two before I made my debut, he pretty much, I think he took 80 wickets one of the years or something, and the lads were just like, he could do whatever he wanted with batters. Yeah. I'm trying to think.
And obviously Moeen as well, you've played with.
Moeen,
talking about exceptional spinners,
in his own right, he is.
Yeah.
He's incredible and turned it an absolute mile for a finger spinner.
Yeah, without a doubt. Some class players. And to play with both Ashwin and Lyon, I mean, that is outrageous. Would they both make your dream team ever of spinners? Would those two be up there?
They'd definitely be in the chat. I think Ashwin was such a coup for us to sort of, when we got told that we'd be signing him for the last few games of the season, like, it was such an incredible thing. Like, you obviously don't get that many Indians come over to play, and to get someone of his ilk to come over and play for little old Worcester was pretty special. But then when he got here, he was the nicest guy and got involved with everything, wanted to look. He just loves cricket. He was one of those, he'd be in the nets bowling all the time, talking about, I think he ended up bowling leg spin it. I remember his first session, he came in, he must have took about 25 wickets in 10 minutes. he was a genius, and I remember he bowled leg spin in one of the games because he got bored of bowling off spin and landed that better than any leg spinner I've ever bowled with. So that was amazing to play with someone like, and his batting as well. He's such a class batting. I remember he scored 80 or 90 in one of that games, and it really was a cut above.
I have got a question about Ashwin though, Ed. Did his teammates like him at Worcester? Yes or no?
yes, they did, very much so. He fitted right in, and he came and we got promoted with him there. So we had a really good atmosphere at the time, and he did really well for us. So no matter what Tim Payne says or anybody else says, I think he is well liked by his teammates.
I was going to say, I'm glad you got the reference, Ed. Yeah, that'll be a pretty memorable line, to be fair, over the years, especially how it ended at the Gabba. But enough talking about that incredible Border Gavaskar Trophy series. Who actually would you say was the toughest that you face in terms of an opposition spinner, though? because you face.
We didn't even get to that.
Exactly.
That many quality finishes you played with.
100%. Because you played Simon Harmer in 2019. Of course, with that Warwickshire-Worcestershire rivalry, Jeetan Patel had many memorable moments against the Rapids. Who do you say was the standout spinner that you faced?
I think, obviously, you talk about Jeet there. Jeetan, we haven't played that much four-day cricket against him, but one-day cricket, he's so skillful. And you always knew whenever he came on that you were going to like struggle to score runs. And he was tough. But I think in terms of genuine sort of spin bowling, we played Harmer in a four-day match, actually, at Worcester. And we were chasing 160, maybe. And he got, I think, he got five or six wickets. And just, he was so tough to play. Again, for a finger spinner, he gets so many revs on the ball and lands it from such a height. He just, yeah, he makes you look like a fool sometimes as a batter. You think the ball's somewhere and it's not quite there. So I think, yeah, that's some of the toughest spin I've had to face. And you can see by his record the last 3 years, he's been the outstanding bowler in county cricket, and he probably will be again this year. So I think that just shows the quality of the guy.
Yeah, it does. Absolutely. And there is one more name I'd just like to throw out there. I don't know if you've faced him before, but I'm going to throw his name out there anyway, and that is Glenn Maxwell. Have you faced him?
I might have faced a couple of balls in a T20 or one day, but yeah, he's as a cricketer, you can't really...
you can't knock him, can you?
His class, can you know? No. He's exciting to watch at all times.
Yeah, he is. And for me, worth every penny in the IPL as well. I can't argue.
Yeah, for RCB. I'm an RCB fan, so... Yeah.
Worth
hopefully the big show can fire. That's all I'll say. 100%. We need him to after spending 14.25 crore on him. Lot of money.
It is a lot of money. It is a very lot of money. But yeah, only time will tell, I guess. Only time will tell. But let's look ahead then. Let's look ahead to 2021 and beyond, of course. Firstly, we'll start with the new county championship structure. Obviously, there's been a massive overhaul this year. It's totally different. And there is obviously three groups. Now, I'll just read out Worcestershire's group, obviously, for the listeners' benefit more than yours, if they don't know. So you're in group one alongside Essex, Warwickshire, Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire and Durham. Now, firstly, what do you make of that group? Other than the obvious one being Warwickshire, which game really stands out to you? And also, are you in favour of the new structure looking past 2021?
Yeah, I think your first question, probably the Essex games, obviously, they've won it the last 2 years, so they're obviously going to be the team to beat, and they've got such a strong sort of settled side. I think that's going to be really tough. I think we play them first game, actually, so I think that will be a real good test for us, and if we could get a positive result there, that'll be set us up really well for the rest of the season. Obviously, being in Warwickshire's group again, I think the fans especially will love that, and it's really nice to... We seem to have missed Warwickshire in the last 4 or 5 years. Whenever we've got promoted, they've been relegated or vice versa. So we actually haven't played that much four-day cricket the last few years. So it'll be nice to be playing. It was nice to play them last year again.
Absolutely.
And sort of have that rivalry in all formats. Mm-hmm. So that, and then obviously the Notts game, I think there's a few connections there. And obviously they're a very strong side and traditionally do very well. So there'll be another one we'll be wanting to sort of get one over on. And if I can get Clarkie out during that, that would be nice.
Here's a question for you. It's a pretty big dilemma, I reckon. Would you rather get Joe Clark out or Sir Alistair Cook out? Because obviously it's kind of a different thing. I mean, Sir Alistair Cook is England's greatest ever batsman.
Yeah,
so
I'm probably going to bit of a knobby answer here. I've already got Cook out, so I'm going to have to say Clarkie because he's already in the party.
Well, there you go then.
Sorry, we can't gloss over that. How did you get Alistair Cook out?
Nick Goff, actually, first it was a genuine dismissal, so I'm pretty pleased with that one. The only thing is, I think they went on to get about 650 in the rest of the innings, but I didn't care because I've got Alistair Cook out.
You got Alistair Cook out, so that doesn't matter. Well, I mean, that's fair enough.
So, yeah, I think it would be nice to get one over on Joe if I can, and there's probably a couple of messages afterwards. But then in terms of the structure, I think it probably did need a bit of a revamp. Probably didn't notice it while we were still playing the sort of division format, but last year I think it made a really interesting competition, and I think sometimes county cricket can be so different from year to year that the division, you can have a side 1 year do really well or do really poorly, and then you can completely flip it the next year. So to have it opened up and to give everyone a chance of winning the whole thing, I think it can only be a good thing. It can only motivate people to do well in all competitions. And yeah, like I say, it's nice to play against different sides. It's you sometimes get in a bit of a rut of playing the same side in year in, year out. So yeah, fingers crossed we can do well in that and sort of get to the next stage, or however they split it up, to the A group or whatever it's going to be called, Super September or whatever it is.
Yeah, we'll see what happens to that. It's, as you say, going to be very, very good. Going to be an exciting competition. And no doubt, a high standard of cricket because, you know, as you say, a lot of teams haven't played a lot of teams. I mean, we've not played Kent in Red Bull cricket for, 2 years?
Oh, no,
so, I mean, they're... Bad. So it's going to be very, very interesting to see what happens. And as you say, it is odd how teams cannot play a team for years, even though you're in like the same level kind of thing.
Yeah.
You're all of the same standard. Of course, there's divisions, but generally everyone's at the same standard. Everyone's pretty much neck and neck, I would say, aside from Essex and Somerset, who are cut above the rest. And, you know, you can go years without playing a side. It is very odd. Spare a thought for Leicestershire and Derbyshire, who haven't been promoted for many years. So, yeah, I mean, it's certainly going to be very interesting.
Yeah, of course. And, the big one for me, of course, is that Bears versus Pears again. Should be good, to be fair. It was a good game last year, wasn't it? Will Rhodes getting a double century. That partnership between Mitchell and D'Oliveira as well.
It was a good wicket, and obviously at the time I think we'd come off the back of a couple of wins. I think you guys had struggled maybe before that, so I think for both sides it kind of gave both teams a bit of confidence going forward. But yeah, it'd be nice to get a result next year, so that especially for us, so we could have the bragging rights. But yeah, it was a good game last year, and Will was another one I played a lot of cricket with. So as hard as it was bowling in and watching him score a double hundred, I was pleased with him. Pleased for him. Because he's a fine player, and I think he's going to have a very, very successful career as captain of the Bears.
Fingers crossed. That's all I'll say. Fingers crossed, of course. And fingers crossed that 2021 does actually provide the goods in terms of fans being back. Of course, the county championship new structure is very, very exciting. The fact that all 18 counties, in theory, as Joe rightfully said there, with regards to Leicestershire or Derbyshire, who knows? Who knows? Something could happen this season. Things could go their way. They could get the rub of the green and go through to Group A. I mean, it has so many different combinations, possibilities. 2021 definitely does seem to be a very, very promising year for county cricket. And in terms of yourself, Ed, what's some areas of your personal game that you're looking to improve upon heading into this season? I know with the bat, that's a big area of your game, which you do like. You do consider yourself an all-rounder. It's an area of your game which we've seen you improve dramatically in the past 2-3 seasons. What do you say are some of the areas of your personal game that you're looking to really improve upon in 2021?
Yeah, I think you've touched on a bit there. I think my batting's probably the one area I really want to keep going with. And I've not scored a first class 100 yet. That's a bit of a chip on the shoulder at the minute. It's one that I just want to kind of love to tick off. And I've kind of been close a few times and sort of threatened, but never quite got there. So I think that for me is a big goal of mine. I've always said I want to be kind of batting 5 and 6, especially at some point in my career. I want to be that genuine all-rounder. It hasn't quite worked out yet, but yeah, that's huge for me. I've done a lot of work this winter on my batting, and something I'm really hoping I'm going to kick on with. And then yeah, just I've been really pleased with my bowling the last years, and I'd like to just continue that and keep taking as many wickets as I can and just be sort of in and around and working well with the lads. And I think we've got some really, really exciting young fast bowlers coming through. So to be able to bowl at the other end, some of those are a bit different to sort of, you look at me and Leachy, we're a little bit more, not quite as quick, and sort of just put it in an area. These young lads are sort of tearing in, bowling it around people's heads. It's nice to play with. It's not as nice in the net sometimes, but it's really exciting times to sort of help and see how they can develop.
Absolutely. And of course, for Worcestershire fans listening to today's podcast, who would you say are maybe two or three names that Pears fans should be looking at heading into 2021? In particular, like under-23s, for example, who are some rising stars down at New Road?
I think you can't look past Jack Haynes at the minute. He's ridiculously talented. He sort of showed glimpses of it last year and had a pretty consistent year without... He was probably disappointed that he didn't score a big score. I think that was probably the only thing he missed last year, but in both formats last year, he really impressed. Like I always forget how young he is. I think he's still only 19, or he might have just turned 20. But I think he's got a big career ahead of him, and he's got a good head on his shoulders. So I think everyone's got high hopes for him. And then, yeah, just a couple of the bowlers. I think you look at Dylan Pennington. He's sort of, again, threatened the last few years. He bowled some extremely good spells at times, and he's a big, fit, strong lad. He's pretty scary to face at times, so I think this year really it's going to be a chance for him to kick on. And then Adam Finch as well. I think Finchy probably didn't get the chances that he'd have liked last year. But again, he's big. He's 6'4", 6'5", whatever he is. Bowls quick. Gets it in and around sort of the right area. And I think he really impressed. He went on loan last year at Surrey. From all the reports that we got, that they were really impressed with him. He took some good wickets, bowled some long spells. So yeah, I think, again, hoping this year that he can sort of add some more firepower to our attack.
Should be interesting then. In particular, those two, Jack Haynes, I must admit, give a shout out to him. He's a very, very exciting young talent. And again, just goes to prove that county cricket is producing these fantastic young batsmen. We've got an absolute embarrassment of riches, really, at the moment in the county circuit, in the batting department. But away from 2021 then, Ed, this is just one final profound question before we do go on to teammates today. What do you think the future holds for Ed Barnard? What are you looking to achieve in the future, not only in the county circuit, but potentially franchise, England? What are your real goals and ambitions for the next few years, per se?
Yeah, I think I'd be lying if I didn't say I wanted to play for England. Like, international cricket, obviously the pinnacle and something that I've always wanted to do. Whether I'll be able to or not, I'm not sure. You've just got to try and do as well as you can. It's always going to be an aim of mine, no matter sort of what age I'm at. I think that's, if you're not aiming for that, there's something a little bit wrong. But yeah, for me, I'd love to get in a position where I'm even thought about in that. But then, yeah, apart from that, sort of, I was obviously the 100. I was disappointed this year that I didn't get picked up after getting picked up last year and then not retained. So that was a little bit gutting. So I'd love to get in a position to be able to have a chance in that and just play in that competition, really. I think as a cricket lover, it's exciting to see it come into the English game. And I think it's going to be an amazing competition. So I'd love to get a chance in that at some point. And any other franchise stuff, really. It's one of those, you chuck your name in the hat. If you get a chance, it'd be amazing to play somewhere else around the world, play with some different players. But yeah, apart from that, I think it's just, I want to do as well as I can for Worcester at the minute. I think we've got a really young, promising side coming through. We've got a chance to sort of take the club to a new level, I think. So I think if I can be a part of that and really have a good, if I have a good career in county cricket in the domestic game, I'd be very proud to have done that. So yeah, I think just head down and do as well as I can. I know it's a bit cliche and things, but you never know where it's going to take you from there. So.
Hard work gets you places.
Yeah, and look at Pat, for example. 2018, went on to play for England, didn't he? Went down to New Zealand alongside Parkey. So anything's possible, Ed. And of course, we both here at the County Cricket Podcast wish you the very, very best of luck. Maybe not so much in Bears versus Pears derbies in particular, when I'm present at Edgbaston.
Just don't catch Livingston again like that, is all I'll say.
But no, in your general cricketing career, Ed, we do wish you the very, very best of luck, of course. And fingers crossed, who knows? That England opportunity could come one day. We'll, of course, have to wait and see. But that does bring us to today's main segment of the podcast. So, Joe, I'll pass over to you now because we do, of course, have teammates. So just before we do start today, of course, for listeners out there, teammates is basically just an assortment of questions, some pretty random ones in there, to be honest, as well, which are going to ask Ed all about his teammates that he shares a dressing room with down at New Road. So, Joe, I'll pass over to you, mate. Let's get today's segment underway.
All right, then. So the first one, in the Worcester dressing room, who has the best nickname?
On the spot. There's probably a couple of good ones that I probably can't repeat, but Josh Chung, he's got a very big resemblance to Mickey Mouse. He gets called Mickey. Dylan Pennington looks very much like Claire Balding, so he gets that one quite a bit. Yeah, I can't really think of one that really sticks out, but yeah, there's a couple of good lookalikes, isn't there? So I'd probably have to go for Dylan. I think the Claire Balding.
Both very, very good nicknames. I must admit, it's better than the classic just adding a Y on the end or an O.
Yeah, no, I think that's unfortunately what you get for 95% of cricketers. So.
Of any cricket at any level, club, professional, international, that's what you'll get, isn't it, really? So, yeah, inventive nicknames are always good.
100%, yeah. And it makes the segment a lot easier and a lot more funnier and entertaining. So glad about that. What a nickname, Claire Balding. Oh, my word. Right. Moving on to our next one then, Ed. This is always a funny one here at the County Cricket Podcast. Who is the teacher's pet down at Worcestershire? Who's always hanging around the coaches, per se?
Oh, Well, I think Charlie Morris is probably the most diligent, hardworking county cricketer that you'll find. Not necessarily teacher set, that might not be the right way of putting it, but he will do everything that he can and work as hard as he can to get where he can. So I think if anybody was going to give that tag, I'd probably give it to Charlie Morris, I think. He is one of the fittest lads I've ever seen as well. He smashed that 2K this morning.
Fair enough. The next teammate's question then. Who is the best at karaoke?
Josh Dell, who, he's a funny man. And yeah, he's probably the most likely to be on karaoke. He wouldn't necessarily be the best, but he'd probably be the first one up there singing. And then Dylan Pennington again, he's got a guitar, which he thinks he can play and probably thinks he can sing, but he really can't. But yeah, I'll probably give it to Josh Dell. I think Delhi's probably going to be the first one up on karaoke within our side.
Fair choice. Fair choice. Now for this next one, I'm going to actually introduce a brand new one. And it's along the same kind of lines. Who in the Worcestershire dressing room would be most likely to win Britain's Got Talent? And what would their talent be?
Oh, who's got a talent? You stumped me, eh? Ollie can dance quite well, I think. Brett Dole is a good dancer. But it probably doesn't come out that much anymore. Yeah, I'd probably have to go start. I can't think of anything off the top of my head that if anybody's got a real talent for anything.
What's Oliveira's style? What's his style of dancing? Break dancing? Tango? Foxtrot?
Yeah, it's probably more the break dancing sort of ilk, more of just a groovy sort of. He's got rhythm. He's got a bit of rhythm behind him, but I think it's probably compared to the rest of us who can't keep to any sort of a beat. I think he's the only one that looks vaguely like he's in time. Not that we do much group dancing together, just to clarify.
The next one. Now, this applies for literally anything on a cricket field. Catches, 50s, 100s, wickets, whatever. Who has the best celebration in the Worcester dressing room?
Oh, there's probably two, I reckon. So, Leachy's fired up, he gets the sort of angry old man scream out, which is it's always funny. We're lucky enough the last year to see it quite a lot because he does take quite a lot of wickets. So he can get the sort of proper angry scream on, which I enjoy. And then Josh Chung again, he's kind of adopted the Alan Shearer, which as a Newcastle fan, I absolutely love. I don't think he sort of deserves to take it off the great Alan Shearer, but he sort of replicated it. So that one's always good fun to watch as well. Tony just running off with his arm in the air.
I have a question to follow up with that one, because of course Mark Wood, pretty similar, he shouts Shearer whenever he kicks the ball against the stumps. Does Tung do that?
No, because I think if Tung tried to kick it, it would not go anywhere near where he tried to kick it. He's not the finest, he's not the best footballer we've got in the squad, so I think Tung's just worried about getting some sort of contact on it.
Keep that in mind. Keep football in mind, because that may be a future question here on today's teammates. But our next question for you, Ed, is who's the kit man's nightmare at New Road? Who's always got their kit hanging all about the dressing room, per se?
Yeah, so I think Gravy, so our kit man, he'll appreciate a shout-out. He's well-known on the county circuit now. He actually loves doing it, but I think Dill gives him a bit of a headache, because sometimes can ask some stupid questions as well as leaving his kit everywhere and just sort of not having a clue where he's left something. I think Graves sort of treats him like he's a bit of a 10-year-old son at times. So there can be some interesting dialogue between those two.
Fair enough. The next one, who is the best dressed and the worst dressed?
Oh, we've got a few for worst dressed, I'll tell you that. Best dressed in this one. Probably Josh Dell. Josh Dell, he's very formally dressed and dressed as well, very smart. Always has a shirt and sort of loafers on or a pair of Chelsea boots. He's got quite a big shoe collection, I think, so he's quite into his sort of his fashion and dressing well. And then worst dressed, Pat Brown's worn some horrendous things at times. Like, he once came in, I think, with a, it was like a purple and green Nike bucket hat on his head. That was horrendous, and he copped a lot of stick for that. Adam Finch, unfortunately, his dress sense isn't the best. And then Josh Tongue again. I'm dropping Tongue in a bit here, but he's he loves this sort of pair, a big pair of Gucci shoes or sort of Gucci t-shirt, which, yeah, they're not loud, I'd call them. I'd call it loud. Not quite.
To put it nicely.
What I go for, but yeah, I think to put it politely.
Does Josh have the headband as well? The classic Gucci headband?
The Saint Maximum.
He hasn't got quite the Saint Maximum yet, which he should do. I think it's more like when Saint Maximum first joined him. I think he had a Sports Direct one off Mike Ashley.
Yeah, he did.
yeah, I think a few of the lads have had headbands on recently, I think due to COVID haircuts and stuff, but a couple of them are wearing them who definitely don't need to wear headbands. So.
I say we need to make that more widespread in county cricket, Gucci headbands while bowling. Get strip bored as well.
I'm not sure anybody's going to live up to Alan Saint Maximum, though. So.
Even though he has to cover it up with a bit of tape, still everyone has Gucci.
It's a little bit village, but...
I said I would like to see that in county cricket. Moving on to our next one then, Ed, and this is very much cricket related. Who's the biggest badger down at New Road? Who really knows their stuff about the game in terms of the stats, figures, players, for example?
Oh, I think that's quite easy. I think Ricky Vessels, I don't think he'd admit it, but he is someone, if you're talking about anybody or anything, he'll know the average, he'll know people's stats, he'll remember. He's played county cricket for a good 20 years now, and he'll remember any dodgy dismissal he's got, any dodgy run out that's been given against the side, even if it was 18 years ago. He doesn't forget a thing. So yeah, I think Ricky would be the most knowledgeable and probably more of a secret badger. I don't think he'd sort of like to openly say, but yeah, he knows a lot.
Fair enough. Now the next one, as Aaron said before, may be relevant to one of your early answers. Who is the best footballer?
Tough question, this one, because I'd love to say myself, but I feel like that's a bit arrogant. Daryl Mitchell, I'd say he's in the Roy Keane ilk of footballer. No nonsense. Yeah, he's not sort of someone you want to be marking you on the morning of a four-day game, because he won't shy away. But he's a very good footballer as well. I'd like to think that we'd compliment each other quite well on a football pitch. So yeah, I'd probably have to go Mitch.
What is your position, Ed, of interest? What's your role in football?
I'd love to be seen as a sort of playmaker, but playmaker.
So moving on to our final question on today's teammate segment then, Ed. This always a contentious one. So think this one through. Who is the best golfer down at Worcestershire?
It's not even a... Tom Fell. Felly's a scratch golfer. He's ridiculous. We've got him and we've got Jake Libby's off about three or four, I think. Oh, no, I think Felly might be like a two. Maybe not quite scratch, but I've seen him play to three under par before. And he's played all his life. And yeah, it's a joy. It's a joy, but also horrendous to play with him, because as a very average golfer myself, it just makes you look and feel so inadequate. But yeah, Felly is comfortably, I think, and 100% of the squad would agree with me on that. I'm sure it can be contentious at other counties, and maybe
it definitely can, yeah.
Golfer it might be, but yeah, I think, fortunately for me, there's no other answer apart from Felly.
Well, I suppose on the flip side of that, who's the worst then? Worcestershire.
Oh, I've got a few. Me, I'd probably be up there. I'm really a very average golfer. Joe Leach, skipper. He's actually got into it recently, but I remember we played we had our team golf day a couple of years ago, and he played with a guy called Cecil Duckworth, who he was our president. He's like a bit of a big cheese around Worcester, and unfortunately passed away this year. But he played with him, and Cecil's sort of 85. He was playing and like just nudging it down the middle, and Leachy was just zigzagging all over the course. I think he had to, after about six or seven holes, I think he just jacked it in and probably had a pint in the back of the buggy. But yeah, unfortunately, I'd probably have to say Leachy. But he might. I think he's probably, he might not have that tag anymore. I think he's been having some lessons recently. So.
Well, I'll tell you what, I guess
the end of last lockdown. No, the first lockdown. You could play golf was one of the first things you could do, wasn't it? So, yeah. You probably deserve to get out on the course a lot. So, yeah.
Well, you'd hope so. After that zigzagging all over the course. Not that I can say anything. I'll do the exact same thing, but yeah, I'm not the best either. So yeah, I can probably relate to Joe Leach there. But that does bring us to an end to today's teammate segment. And of course, it brings us to an end to what's been a fantastic podcast, Ed. So just before we end today's, obviously, episode here on the County Cricket Podcast, do you have any kind of just final wrap-up words, any social media channels to promote, for example?
No, I don't think so. I think obviously I just want to thank you guys for having me on. I've really enjoyed being on and looking forward to the season and maybe catching up for a beer at some point with you two when we've just been in Warwickshire, Lancashire.
And there it is. What a way to end a podcast.
That won't be happening. Beating Lancs won't be happening.
Neither will the Warwickshire part.
Definitely. But just
maybe it'd be nice if all three of us are at finals day this year.
Hey,
yeah, that exactly. That compromise.
The most democratic way to end today's episode of the County Cricket Podcast. But of course, Ed, from myself and Joe here at the County Cricket Podcast, thank you very much for today. It's been an absolute pleasure. Bell from a podcast. Really interesting, entertaining as well. You've been a fantastic guest. And of course, guys, we will leave Ed's social media channels down in the podcast description. Go and give him a follow from us two here at the County Cricket Podcast. But that does bring us to an end to today's episode here at the County Cricket Podcast. To all of the listeners out there, thank you very much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.